Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for this week's card. We have a real special card, actually, seeing as how we've been all quarantined and locked away in our houses for so long. So we got UFC 249. It's going to be in Jacksonville, Florida. We got a banger. We got two title fights, one interim fight, and then one just official title fight. So that'll be good. I'm going to be joined again by the big homie, Eric. And yeah, let Eric say what's up real quick.
What's up, my man? Thanks for having me back on the podcast once again. I hope everything's doing well with you and the family through these crazy times. And very excited for the card tomorrow night and the next three cards in the, what is it, next week? Next 8 days?
Yeah, I think we get one, what, on Wednesday, something like that?
I think Saturday.
Yeah,
perfect timing to have sports back because it's starting to get a little stir crazy.
Yep. Give us a nice little brain break that we all need. Just, you know, if you guys don't know, me and Eric, we've been doing this for a long time. I'll give you guys just a real quick, you know, I'm a former provider, content provider, kind of for all sports, kind of a jack of all trade when it comes to all sports. But really the last, really since UFC started, but really the last like 3 or 4 years, I've really been diving into the content side of more of things as I've kind of mastered my craft a little bit as far as MMA is concerned, which is going to be multi-mass entry for those of you who don't know. In a blender, you know, that's me. Been doing this for a long time. I've known E for about 3 years or so now. One of the best minds in the business. So I'll let him tell you a little quick bit about himself and then we'll get rolling.
So I basically fell in love back around 2002 or so, right when I was a junior in high school, and then really got into it in college, post-college, and then eventually when MMA DFS came out, I immediately fell in love with that. And then
there we go. You were talking about you like back in high school, you kind of been following
everything. I started watching it religiously back in high school, which was like graduated in 2004. So I started watching it a couple years before that and then started playing MMA DFS when it first came out and got really into that and then started providing content about 3.5 years ago or so. And I've been doing so ever since and now do my own thing. And I provide a DraftKings cheat sheet each week or for each card. And then I also routinely join Sway on his podcast to go and break down the fights.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, like I said, just to reiterate, one of the best minds. Like I said, I've started following E actually in a community, kind of, you know, taking his notes. You know, like I said, already kind of, you know, had my own knowledge, but still, you can never stop learning. You know, you can always be learning. You know what I'm saying? Agreed. So yeah, man, we definitely kind of just hit off right away, and yeah, man, it's been money ever since. So real quick, before we dive into the actual breakdown, FanDuel has had a scoring change. This is only going to be their second or third slate. So, you know, it's not a surprise. We might see another one. I hope we see another one because I don't really like this particular one. I know E doesn't either. But there has been a scoring change. E, do you still got it up? Can you go ahead and give them the rundown on
up right now?
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. So
in just a second, I'll break down all the scores, but the newest change that they've made for this week is in the MVP spot. They've added takedown defended, which is 4.5 points. And then takedown defense for regular position is 3 points. And then they've also added submission attempts, which I find very odd. And so in the MVP spot, they're giving 7.5 points for each submission attempt, which is pretty big. And then in the regular position, it's 5 points. And so on FanDuel, with the scoring, it definitely gears more towards fighters that are going to finish the fight early. So like a first round finish is 150 points. A second round win is 112. This is for MVP spots, of course. 112. Third round, 75. Fifth round is 37. And a decision win is just 20 points, which is 10 points less than on DraftKings. Knockdowns are 2 points more on FanDuel. significant strikes are the same, but the big difference in grappling points is that FanDuel doesn't score advancements, passes, or reversals, which, as we all know, can get you massive points on DraftKings. Massive. So it's really a whole different ballgame when you're coming to your lineup construction on FanDuel than it is on DraftKings.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. And we were talking about it. I'm not really sure why they made the change. One thing it's weird. One thing I think it will do, though, is as we've been kind of talking for a while about it, there was bound to be kind of a lot of ties in FanDuel based off the way construction was. I can see, based off of the new scoring change, that possibly that could, you know, you could see a lot more unique lineups.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, yeah.
But it still doesn't really make sense as far as the scoring, because you can see guys who are losing and really might have got their ass kicked, you know what I'm saying? But say they defended like four or five submissions, maybe a takedown. If they just have, you know, if on the other side you got a religious wrestler, they might put up 50, 60 points in a loss, which is crazy. But yeah. So we thought that'd be important for you guys to kind of know. And we'll get moving and grooving, unless there's anything else you want to touch on real quick, E.
I think that's it for right now.
Yeah, man. All right. So let's get to it. Let me get started up here. So one thing I do like to kind of go over real briefly now, I want to tell you, you want to take these numbers kind of with a grain of salt, especially when it comes to the inside the distance odds. You do kind of want to take that with, kind of a grain of salt. But we do have a few fights that does have a little bit of implications. We have about three or four fights that do have a heavy inside the distance odd. And I can tell you, actually, the inside the distance, what that basically means is, like, Vegas thinks the fight's going to end early. Somebody's going to get knocked out early. So they're saying that, you know, this means it's heavy. It's going to finish earlier inside the distance. And that kind of segue us into our first fight, because this one does have a decent inside the distance odd. But this is one of those ones I really wouldn't take. I really wouldn't put too much value on it. Reason being is because you got Ryan Spann coming in against Sam Alvey. Smiling Sam Alvey, man, this is a tough SOB. And the guy, I mean, yeah, he's kind of a punching bag, but he's tough. And so I don't really know how that's going to play into this fight. You know, you got Ryan Spann at 9,300. He's -420. Sam Alvey's +317, and he's 6,900. I'll let Eric give you guys the FanDuel pricing. But we don't really kind of need to harp on this one too much. We kind of agree here as far as the play. We're gonna basically fade Ryan Spann here. I don't think it really matters how many lineups you're playing or how you're doing it, because me and Eek, we kind of do different as far as how many lineups we're playing, and we discussed it enough. I mean, it's, you know, yeah. He's pretty much a fade. If you're playing a massive amount of lineups, you can take some shots on him for sure, just to be, you know, smart and have some hedge plays. But for the price that he has, and for the outcomes that we kind of foresee, we're hoping we can get away with the fade here. What do you think, Eek?
Yeah, I do like him in cash solely because I think he's probably the safest of the 9K fighters. Like, something would have to go horrifically wrong for him to lose.
Right.
So, and with Francis, obviously, Rosenstrick could clip him. We're doing – there's a chance, obviously, he's past it and Olenek clips him. But with Spann, like, Alvey's really past it. There's rumors that this is his retirement fight. And Spann's just better everywhere. He has reach, hits harder. Better striking, better grappling, but it's just, like, he has two finishes in the UFC, and one he scored over, what did he score, 110, the other one he scored 80 in the finish, which isn't really good, and then his other was a decision win, and he only scored 73 there. Yeah. So let's say he scored 85 to 90, that's fine for cash, but I really don't see there's any way that he ends up on the optimal lineup at the end of the night with all the other fighters that are below him. And same thing on FanDuel. He's the most expensive fighter there, so I'm going to have little to no exposure. And Sam Alvey, he's the cheapest fighter on FanDuel at $8. And I'm making 60 lineups. I might throw him in two lineups, I guess. He just doesn't have any output. So unless he lands one big punch, he's not going to score any points.
Yeah, unless he lands that punch, which, I mean, shit, crazy shit can happen. You know, I'll say it early, crazy stuff usually happens in these cards, so it can definitely happen. But I don't see it. And yeah, you're right, man. I'm looking at it right now too. Dude, this cat scored 78 points, but he subbed Devin Clark out in the second round. Like, you get 60 points for that anyway. You know what I'm saying? So that tells you he didn't really do anything.
Exactly.
So yeah, I'm with you there. I'm definitely with you there. Yeah, we can move on. So next up, we have Charles Rosa going up against Bryce Mitchell. This is an interesting fight. I'm glad we kind of get it early too. Maybe we can get sneaky here a little bit. Charles Rosa is +138. He is coming in as the underdog. Bryce Mitchell is -164 on DraftKings. Mitchell is 8,500. And then coming back, you got Rosa at 7,700. Man, I think there's going to be a lot of recency bias on Bryce Mitchell in particular. I think I wouldn't say he's got the name value, but maybe for, for some kind of casuals who maybe just recently started following the fights and stuff like that, they're going to know his name. They're going to know his whole camo shorts, thing.
And
seeing his fishing stuff and all his videos and all that kind of stuff. I mean, which, it's cool. He's a cool cat. He seems like a cool dude, but I think this matchup is tough for him. I think we get a really, really good price on Charles Rosa. And I think he's super live here, especially for GPPs, for tournaments. He's going to be the play here, I think, for me. Bryce, at 8,500, he's going to have to do something massive. And this early into the card, when you get discounts on some of the other guys getting a little bit later, you got later on in the fight, Cerrone, Pettis, both at pretty much 8K. You got Greg Hardy later on in the card at 8,600. So do you want to pay that much for Bryce Mitchell when you can, you can pay up just a little bit more for Hardy? You can make that decision, but yeah, I think Rosa's definitely got the higher upside. He's going to be lower owned, which is what we want in tournaments. You want low owned, high scores. It's not rocket science.
Yep.
Low owned, high scores, win you money. So what do you think, E?
Yeah, I completely agree. And Rosa's just a much more well put together fighter. Like, Mitchell obviously is a better opportunistic submission threat.
Yeah.
But Rosa is a better black belt. He has better wrestling. He has much better striking, has much better cardio. And he's fought much better competition. He's fought Yair Rodriguez. He's fought Shane Burgos and had a very competitive fight with him. And then he just beat Manny Bermudez. So, this is a guy who's – this is a guy who's fought – I don't want to say the best of the best, but really highly ranked guys. And he's held his own or won. And against a – guy like Bryce Mitchell, like, the only way I can see Mitchell winning this fight is if he can catch Rosa in some type of sub very early on, because I just think Rosa it might not be a blowout, but just kind of slightly outgun him everywhere else. Land more takedowns, get back to his feet quicker if he needs to. Like I said, he's a much better striker and he has better cardio. And he's also insanely durable.
Yeah.
So, especially at the discount we're getting, where he's in the mid to high 7Ks, and then on FanDuel, where he's $11. Besides Gaethje at $15 on FanDuel, he's probably the best. Rosa is probably the best option for MVP spot on FanDuel besides Gaethje if you're looking for a punt.
Yep, that's one thing too, guys, that makes FanDuel so different from DraftKings. It's kind of weird. I remember a little bit ago, DraftKings tried to mess around with I forget what they were calling it, like a captain mode or something.
I did not like that.
Yeah, and it's almost like the same format. I don't really like it either. I'm not sure why they're doing it. But that is going to make things a little bit interesting. That definitely makes Rosa interesting over there. So.
And real quickly, Rosa wins by decision at +290 is very interesting.
Yeah, that is real interesting. That is real interesting. Boston strong, man. Besides Bryce Mitchell and that twister, and honestly, that twister, I can't say it wasn't impressive, for that shit to happen and for everything to go so right, for him to be able to actually pull it off and for him to have, the wherewithal to be able to pull it off, too. Oh, shit. Okay.
You and I talked about it earlier, too, but it was pretty obvious that Matt Seals had no desire to be in the cage at night, and he did. As soon as he could get out of that fight, he got out of it.
Oh, man. Massive stunt was pulled. Massive stunt was pulled.
Y'all know that's the truth.
I mean, it's pretty crazy. But yeah, so there we go on that featherweight bout. We'll keep moving and grooving here. We got the next fight. We got Nico Price going up against Vicente Luque. Vicente Luque is 9K coming back. Nico is 7,200. This is a rematch from their former fight, where Vicente won the first fight pretty handedly. You got Nico at plus 223. You got Vicente Luque at minus 276. The first thing I have in my notes here is funny is bang bang, because this is going to be a bang, man. This is going to be a bang.
Oh yeah.
You know, Vicente, man, he's, like I said, he kind of flossed over Nico the first time. I'm really expecting more of the same. He's just technically better. He's stronger. He's just better everywhere. Nico is like, he's got like the fluky, like that crazy quirky kind of thing going for him. But he takes too many punches, especially to the face, and Vicente will definitely do that. I'm hoping we get Vicente a little bit lower owned too. What do you think on this one, E?
Yeah, I agree. Luque really outclassed him in the first fight. And I know, obviously, I have some concern of the same, but I've been seeing a lot of people saying that the huge concern here is that Luque's taken a ton of damage since then, which is true, but people also need to realize that Price has been KO'd two times since that fight as well, and then he gets hit a lot in all his fights. I mean, he was losing to James Vick before he came back. He was losing to – oh, man, why am I forgetting his name? The guy he knocked out from bottom.
Oh, was that Geoff Neal? That was Neal, right?
No.
Was that Tim Means?
No, who was it? I'm going to have to look it up real quick. But he came back from that, but he was losing that fight. And it's just, Luque is just technically better everywhere. Better striker, better footwork, better wrestler, much better some grappler.
Oh, I remember who, it was Randy Brown, bro.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
So Randy was winning that fight and obviously got knocked out.
Yeah. Oh,
he was going,
God.
God.
I was like, yes, that's what I was. You're like, yes, yes, yes. Oh my God! You gotta be shit.
That's almost like every Nico Price fight.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep.
So, and because of that, obviously he's in play in GPPs because of the upside. But obviously, please don't go anywhere near him in cash.
Yeah.
And then, as far as Luque, I think he's the sneakiest of the 9K fighters to break the slate. Mm-hmm. Like, because I mean, there's a legit chance that Luque goes out there and lands 60 strikes, a knockdown, and then gets a second knockdown, which is a KO blow, or gets a knockdown and then a pass and a sub, and he'll score, 115, 120, which we've seen him do before multiple times.
Yep.
And guys like Francis, who will be very highly owned. I mean, his upside, as good as he is, and it's nice to see him score 100 points. Francis is never going to score 120 or 130 because he's not going to be able to land the strikes the other guys, just because he hits so damn hard. So his upside's capped. And then Wardoom, he can put up a big score, obviously, but Luque has about the same upside. And then Luque has way more upside than Span. So I think And like, if you decide, let's say you're making 20 lineups and you're going to fade, if you're going to fade the two main events, I would definitely have Luque in that lineup.
Yeah, no, I like it for sure. I mean, yeah, you got like just looking at his recent fights, and this is not even going back far, guys. Like, we just back to 2018. If we're looking at his dubs, he's only got one fight where he scored less than 107 points. Everything is 140s, 120s, 110s. I mean, he's got more than one path to this type of score.
Oh yeah.
So it definitely makes things live for him. And one thing too is that I want to touch on this one. He's the favorite. This one also has a minus 380 inside the distance currently. That's pretty big. That's pretty telling too. I mean, especially if we think we can maybe get him lower owned. Think about it, guys. So next up we have, let me get back over there. We have Uriah Hall going up against Jacare Souza, and this is going to be a middleweight fight. Man, I love watching Jacare fight, even though he's old man river, both of these guys. But I love watching him fight.
Same.
Yeah, even just his walk into the ring, you know, it's like, yeah, it's fight. It's going down. You got Jacare, he's 8,300. Uriah is coming back at 7,900. Plus 101 currently what I'm looking at here for Uriah. And the favorite here, Jacare, is minus 124. I'm sure that'll probably change a little bit come actually fight night, but pretty much it's a pretty much a pick 'em if you want, you know, like to be honest about it. This one is going to be pretty good. For DraftKings, it's going to be tough though. We were kind of talking about it earlier. Like both of these guys are on the decline. Sousa's on the decline, yep. Man. Like that's just the truth. He definitely on fan. I'll let E kind of get more into it on like FanDuel and stuff too, because he's been definitely diving into that a little bit more than me. So, but I mean, I'm sure he's going to be the better play on FanDuel just because of those stats that we talked about, the submission for sure. Attempts and all that kind of stuff. But you know, he's coming off back to back losses. The guy has not had a sub attempt since 2017, and what was it? He hasn't had a takedown in like
that since May 12th of 2018.
Yeah. Yeah, which is crazy.
Almost 2 years.
Which is nuts when you think about his style of fighting and his just, you know, and the way he fights and the way he wins. But with that being said, you know, Uriah, I think, is going to have the better boxing, that he's going to be just the better technical fighter. But when I say better technical, I can't really say better. He'll be more technical. He'll be a little stagnant out there, too, if you want me to be honest. They're both a little stiff. But Uriah be a little stagnant out there. But we were kind of discussing this too. I mean, Jacare can K this guy out on the feet, and at 8,300, if we can get
for sure.
even I honestly think, you know, if you can maybe just put like a 15% on a guy like this, that might be enough to go along with the rest of your combinations. That might be enough depending on his ownership, because I do think while he does have that name value, I think because of where he's fighting in the card and because of the price point, that might add some of the ownership, but I still think it's going to be capped. I don't think it'll be where it should be. I probably will be underweight to that just because there's a lot of fights that I do want to target, but at 8,300, you know, if he does the damn thing, he's going to be optimal. That's just that, like, yeah. He'll be on the sure. winning lineup. And he does have paths to that. But it's weird. It's weird for kind of both of these guys. What do you think?
Yeah, and first of all, in FanDuel, they're only separated by $1. Jacare is 16, and Uriah Hall is 15. And Uriah Hall just doesn't do much at all, unless he lands that flash KO. So in FanDuel, I don't have really much interest in all, but I do have some interest in Jacare on FanDuel. My only concern is that he won't be getting the advancements and passes that he will on DraftKings.
Yeah.
So I have some concern about that, but I also do think Jacare is live to a KO on the feet, because he does have decent boxing, and he hits pretty damn hard. He hits stiff as he throws. Yeah. So, and then on FanDuel, I think, like I said, I'm DraftKings. I don't have much interest in Hall at all. I'm making 20 lineups, and I'll probably have him in one. And then Jacare, I think, has sneaky GPP winning upside, and I'll probably be slightly overweight to the field on him.
Yep. I totally agree. I don't have your sheet currently pulled up. I was looking at it earlier, just to give people as far as how to kind of read the sheet and how it can correlate to the podcast and stuff. Any of these guys on your radar for cash or anything like that? Probably not.
Jacare, I don't mind in cash, but I mean, in that same area, there's Esparza, who's much, you don't have to worry about her getting finished, really.
Right.
And so, but I have Jacare marked as a cash and GPP play.
Okay.
But I slightly prefer him more in GPP. And then I left Uriah Hall completely off the sheet. Yeah. Like if you're doing mass entry GPP and you're making over 35, 50 lineups, of course you can have some shares, but I don't really think you need to have much Uriah if you're making under, I mean, unless you're making, like I said, at least double digit lineups, because he's had finishes where he scores 70 points. So there's no guarantee, even if he gets a KO, there's no guarantee he ends up on the optimal lineup, especially with Gaethje, Rosa, Cruz, all those guys right behind him and cheaper.
Yeah, yep. And he is right on that cusp. I mean, he's 7,900. Yeah. You can call it pretty much 8K. I mean, yeah, he's
basically in his lane for ending up in the optimal lineup.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Like, everything else would have to fall his way. So
yeah,
I just can't see it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, like if you guys have been listening for a while, you know, that's my game, the MME, the GPP. I'm not touching this guy, man. I mean, I'm sure because I'll be running so many, it's going to, you know, I'll have to have some just to be able to have my combinations right. And just so I don't, you don't force the optimizer to blow up, but, it's going to be like 7%, something like that. Like he doesn't score well. And when you're doing stuff like that and you have those many lineups, you basically, I was talking about it, it's dead money. You got to have those lineups in there just in case something crazy happens, but you know, it's probably not going to happen. And those lineups are dead. But yeah, so more so just one of those situations, but yeah, man. So grooving in, you were just actually talking about Carla Esparza. We have Esparza going up against Michelle Watterson. Michelle Watterson is +133 in this strawweight bout. She's 7,800. So she's going to be the cheaper fighter coming in against Carla Esparza, who is 8,400. This one, we don't have to talk about too much. Esparza is going to be the favorite here at 157. I know for cash, you did just mention that you liked her. Mm-hmm. So we got that for GPPs. I don't really like this fight, man. If you wanted to get cute, I mean, I guess you could play Michelle Watterson because she's going to be cheap.
Watterson would be preferred in GPP.
Yeah.
But even then, like, I'm not going to have any in 20 lineups.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't advise you to either because she just doesn't score well. She would have to put up like the most significant strike she's ever put up in her life. And that's just not the matchup that she's in as well. Just to give you a little bit of a breakdown, like that's just not the matchup that she's in. Carla's not just going to stand at range and let her pick her apart, point fighter. That's just not going to happen.
Carla's going to have to get in her face. And we all know Carla will do that. She's a little bulldog.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you like her for cash. Yeah. And that's why you like her for cash, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like, Watterson doesn't have great takedown defense. I think Carla can get takedowns and her boxing's improves and she throws in volume. And so I think she can land some strikes and I'm not expecting a great score from Carla. So in cash, if Carla can get me 65 to 75, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Cause the rest of that price ranges. So there's so much variance.
Yeah. And in cash, I mean, you pretty much want like what three? You want like three or four wins. You know what I mean? You want like three solid. You want three, four wins. You want to, if you have to, and you know, you got to get a punt that can score you pretty decent, even in a loss. A lot of the times, that kind of
So, well, like for cash this week, I think the double stacks in play.
Yeah.
The two main events. So obviously, you're sacrificing two losses, but obviously, the loser in both of those fights has a possibility to score very well.
Right.
So obviously, and when you're stacking, you're looking, some people say for over 100 points. To be safe, I like to say over 120.
Yeah, we want more than that.
Yeah. And I think both of those fights will safely cross those barriers.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yep. That's a good take, man. All right, brother. So we'll keep moving along here. We have Aleksei Oleinik going up against Fabricio Werdum. Man, my guy Fabricio, I love watching this guy fight. I'm kind of glad he's just back fighting and doing his thing. This card, dude, is just so packed. Like, a lot of these fights, like even that Jacare Uriah Hall fight, like that could headline, dude. Like, people would watch that as a headline. They're both old farts, but people would like, we've seen worse, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like,
for sure.
So I mean, we got a lot of heavy hitters here. This one is a heavyweight fight, and Aleksei is 7K. Coming back, you got Werdum at 9,200. We kind of touched on it a little bit. I'll let E take this one over first. What do you think?
So we'll touch on DraftKings real quickly, and then we'll go over the FanDuel salaries. So in DraftKings, I have Fabricio Werdum in my GPP core. He's one of my favorite overall plays on the slate. I mean, he's just so much better in every single aspect of where this fight could possibly take place that it's incredibly hard for me to see him losing unless he gets clipped with one of Olenek's weird windmill haymakers. So, I mean, so I'm going to have on DraftKings, I'll have around 50% Werdum, 40% Werdum. And then obviously I'll try to run that back with a little bit of Olenek just in case. And so I'll have probably around 10% Olenek. But I think Werdum, decent salary, huge upside in this matchup. Everybody that beats Olenek always scores well. And Werdum scores well in his wins. And then on FanDuel, I have Werdum's the second most expensive at $22. And obviously because he's very live to a quick finish, I don't mind him for MVP spot, although I think on FanDuel, I'm going to be paying down a lot in the MVP spot. And then with Olynyk, he's tied for the second cheapest on the slate at $9. And if you're making over five FanDuel lineups, of course you can take a shot on Olynyk because he's going to win by Hail Mary KO, which will score well. But other than that, I don't have much interest in Olynyk, and give me lots of weird doom. It's not a lock by any means.
Yeah, for sure. Then real quick, just to touch on like why you would want to pay down in the captain spot. This one kind of just correlates in anything that kind of has that format. Now it is different between DraftKings and FanDuel because DraftKings does adjust their pricing on the captain spot. So you're going to pay more for the captain kind of thing. FanDuel doesn't do that though, but the objective kind of remains the same, that you probably want to put a cheaper guy in there sometimes, more so on FanDuel more so on DraftKings for sure. That way you can load up the rest of your roster. But still on FanDuel as well. I mean, you know, even though the pricing is not there, you do still want to have a lower owned.
And it's also totally slate dependent too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in this case, when we do have a possible, like we can maybe put Rosa in there, you know, we have some guys we can maybe put in there.
Gaethje's a perfect MVP spot.
Gaethje's a perfect, you know, like it's going to allow you so much more like availability for your roster construction. So
because then you can load up on guys like Luque and Wardum and Cejudo or Francis or whoever you want, really.
And not have to play two or three dogs in your lineup, like two or three, like cheap, because people are going to do it. Trust me, you're going to see some lineups.
And honestly, or go ahead.
No, well, yeah, you're going to see some lineups. People are going to stack the first fight. People are going to try to fit all the 9K fighters in there.
Correct.
And you're going to see two and three of the 69. Like, you're going to see crazy shit. So just
obviously, like you mentioned, with the pricing on DK, you have to pay more attention to the salaries because it goes up. But on FanDuel, the reason I like paying down for Gaethje in the MVP spot is because if he wins, he's probably going to be almost definitely the highest scorer on the slate. So where a lot of people putting Francis and Tony. Cejudo and Tony or Wardum in the MVP spot, you can really get an edge in the field by going all the way down to he's not gonna be low owned, but I think it's interesting play, especially an MVP spot for him, especially with all those 150 first round points and the early KO points. I mean, if Gaethje wins and you have an MVP spot on FanDuel, you're in good shape.
He should be looking pretty good. And if we're talking about just tiers as far as ownership goes, he is going to be on that lower, like on that lower end of that tier, you would say, right? I mean, he's going to be.
I'm not sure about FanDuel yet, just because this is my only third time playing it, and obviously the rules are different now. But on DraftKings, I think he'll probably be the second highest owned fighter on the slate. I
think so. Yeah.
Maybe on FanDuel, he'll still probably be close to 35%, I would think.
And you think that's just because people will just be like, fuck it, I'm just going to stack this fight up? Like,
And then because also when he's $15 and the whole range, you have Watterson at 14, Stevens at 14, Cerrone at 15, Pettis at 15, Hall at 15. And so if Justin wins, he's gonna crush all those other scores. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. All right, man. Well, next up we have we got a run back. We got Donald Cowboy Cerrone going up against Anthony Pettis. Anthony Pettis is -141. He's the favorite. You got Donald Cerrone coming in at +118. Both of these guys are pretty much this. We kind of chatted earlier. I know they're pretty much the same price on FanDuel. But I know
exact same price. Yeah.
What is it 15 or something like that?
I'm going to scroll down right now. Yes, sir. 15. Yeah.
Donald is 8K on DraftKings and Anthony Pettis is 8,200 on DraftKings. I mean, it's crazy. Cerrone's coming off of three losses, man. Tough losses too, dude. Like
that three loss, KOs that, in 9 months.
Shit, man. That loss to Connor was pretty brutal. And like
as with the Gaethje, and then just, he got beaten up real bad by Tony.
Just draining. You know what I mean? Like just draining losses too. And then you got Anthony Pettis who he's been looking better, but like, it's hard to really call on this guy too. He's going to be definitely like better on the hands. Right. And Donald's been taking a lot of damage. This one's going to be interesting. Me and he kind of went back and forth on this one a little bit. it's going to be a fight that I think we might be able to, we might be able to get away with kind of having lower ownership on these guys. But, I mean, personally, I think Donald might be the play just because normally Donald comes in as the underdog. People think he's going to get flossed and then crazy shit happens. And you guys got to remember my mentality is going to be different from Ease on some things because we play the game different. And that's why I think we're so like we're such a good team because we're going to give you that dynamic. I'm more of a multi-mass entry GPP kind of guy. I'm looking at hedges and all that kind of stuff. And he's, while he's, you know, a great GPP player as well, he's just definitely more rounded when it comes to just the overall and cash and just that kind of stuff too. So, and that's just kind of more of his game. So that's all that is, guys. But yeah, man, I think Donald might get him lower owned because of that. People are going to think like we are, you know, and, while I'm not saying to put all your money on Donald, cause don't do it, don't do it. But if you're playing like 15, 20 lineups, fuck man, you better have Donald Cerrone in one of them shits. I can tell you much.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, you can do what you want with Anthony Pettis because I do think he does have paths to victory. But this one's interesting. What do you got on this one?
So like you said, we're coming in on opposite sides of this fight. I like Pettis to get the job done again here. It just, I mean, like we talked about, Cerrone's been finished now three times in the last nine months. This will be his fourth fight now. This will be his fourth fight now. And I know Pettis quits in his fights when the going gets tough. Pettis gets going and he looks for a way out. But like, there's a difference between Anthony Pettis quitting in his fights and Donald Cerrone getting legitimately finished, if that makes any sense. Like, Pettis isn't taking all of that damage and he's not getting knocked out. Like, Donald is.
That's why he's quitting, because he don't want to take that
exactly,
damage.
Exactly.
He's like, no, I'm good.
Exactly. Yeah, and so, but here, I think Pettis knows in general, I think if Anthony shows up like he should show up, I think he knows that he should roll here. But I mean, he's had some weird quotes this week where he was talking about how the quarantine made him realize how much time he was wasting training, which
it's not shit you want to hear on fighting.
No,
man.
like that's what you hear from a fighter who's checked out. Yep. So it's just like, obviously, don't, please, for the love of God, don't touch either guy in cash. But as far as a pure GPP play, I mean, this is pure boom or bust. I do like Anthony Pettis here, and I probably will have around 25-30%. I'll never pick a guy that's been finished three times in 9 or 10 months and that's fighting again that next month. I don't care who it is. It's just, I can't do it. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it comes back to slap me in the face, but obviously I'll have a lineup or two of Donald just in case Anthony obviously decides to quit at some point. But if anybody gets a finish here, I do think it's Pettis, and I think it's going to be very early. As we all know, Cerrone's a slow starter, and Anthony can get off the quick starts. But like I said, this is a fight between two guys where you have no clue what the hell you're going to get at any point in every fight where they compete. So just be aware of that when you roster these guys. And on FanDuel, like I said, they're both $15. I have slightly more interest in Pettis just because I think he has more finishing upside and that scores better on FanDuel. But I don't mind it if you want to have equal shares of these guys on FanDuel sprinkled in. Just don't go too heavy.
Yeah, for sure. No, great takes, man, for sure. I definitely see it. This is one of those fights I feel like it's like, just sit back and enjoy it for the most part. Don't have too much money going, because at the end of the day, we're talking about money, right? Like, don't put too much money on either one of these guys. Sit back and enjoy kind of the legacy fight, man. Two guys banging it out for us. Because this is one of those fights I feel like they put together for the fans just so we could see a good
scrap. For sure, yeah.
And, you know, like, so just enjoy it. But, yeah, no, for sure, man. Good shit. So we keep rolling. Next up we have – let me move up here. We have Jorgen De Castro going up against Greg Hardy. We kind of touched on this one a little earlier. Another heavyweight fight here. Greg Hardy's the minus 200 favorite here. And you have Jorgen De Castro at the plus 166 dog. Jorgen De Castro is 7,600 and Greg Hardy is 8,600. I'll touch on this one just real quick, and then I'll shoot it over to you. This one, like, you know, we were talking to, we've seen like Greg Hardy's pretty much whole MMA career. It hasn't been that long. Nope. He's done a lot of stupid stuff in that time frame. But that happens when you're kind of new and immature to a new sport, and you're kind of learning on the go, and they're just throwing you kind of to the wolves, as to say. But I mean, the dude's been improving. The dude's been improving. Besides the mistakes he's had, he probably really should have had those two victories back, because he's definitely winning both of those fights. I mean, you know, but you know, you can't be a dumbass. Like, who takes an inhaler? Like, come on, bro. Like, God. Seriously, like, who you on live?
That was the weirdest shit I've ever seen.
And he was like, no, my coach said it was cool. Like, oh my God. And then they let him do it. It's like, so who's worse?
That's on his coach, because Dean Thomas has been around the game forever. So that's that's all. I couldn't believe he
said it was sanctioned.
Oh, God.
But yeah, man, I think Greg Hardy's definitely got the upside here. I like him a lot. He's been improving. I think he has a pretty good matchup, because he's got somebody who's going to be aggressive on the other end. Jorgen is going to be aggressive. I don't think he's going to let him sit back and kind of take his time. And I think that's what we need to see, just that killer instinct from Greg Hardy, because lately he's turned into more of a, I want to pick my spots. I don't want to kind of go out there and throw heavy haymakers and get tired. I think he's figured that out.
Yep.
But that's what we want as far as scores. And I think he's going to be forced to do that. So he's going to be my pick here. 8,600. We get a discount on him on DraftKings. Not much to think about. I'll have probably about 30-40% on this guy, to tell you the truth. And see what the ownership is looking like on the other end. What do you think on this one, my man?
Real quickly, before I go into my breakdown, what do you think his ownership will be on DraftKings GPPs? I'm struggling to get a read on it.
If I was to get a read on it, I think – honestly, I think there's going to be a lot of public bias on him.
Yeah.
I think people, he's not going to be as high owned as he should be, because people just don't like him, and people are going to kind of want him to get beat up or whatever. They're going to see his last two fights probably, and see that he lost both of them and not look hard enough, and see that he really probably won that the second one. And then, you know, he was just thrown to the wolves in the last one, dude. Like, he was outmatched. It was short notice, and he still went three rounds with one of the best heavyweights. I mean, top five, you know,
top five. Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's been up there for a while. So I think people are going to see that he's not going to be as high on as he should be. If I was to put a number on it, I'd say we're probably going to get about like maybe a 27 to 32% on him.
Okay.
Somewhere around there.
Sounds about right.
You know,
that sounds about right. Yeah. So I do like Greg Hardy a lot in this matchup, and I know there are a lot of people who hire Jorgen De Castro. I need to see more before I can fully hop on that train. I know his last two wins have looked, just from the naked eye, have been impressive. But I mean, those two opponents have a combined 8 pro fights, so it's not like he's fighting the best of these guys out here. And then, I mean, in his last fight, obviously it was a fantastic KO, no doubt. But I mean, Justin Taffa served his chin up on a silver platter there.
Yeah, four significant strikes, game over.
And Taffa was winning that fight before he did that. So, and then, like, Greg Hardy isn't that type of fighter. Greg Hardy doesn't come crashing in on a straight line with his chin sticking. Like, he's not going to do that. So, I know Jorgen De Castro has nice leg kicks. I get that. But he's going to have to get on the inside to that, because he's at 7 inches of reach disadvantage. He's at a 6-inch height disadvantage. And I actually think Greg Hardy hits just as hard, even though he hasn't had many KOs recently. I think it's more because he has been using kind of that hit and move style
instead of sitting, change his game up.
Yeah. Instead of sitting down,
he's just trying to see what works. Yep. Yeah.
He even said yesterday that he's ready to meet in the middle of the cage and just throw down. Yep, so I really like Greg Hardy here. I wouldn't be shocked if he won by decision, but I think there's a very good chance he wins inside the distance. And I think he's an interesting target to be overweight on GPP compared to the field.
Yep. No, I'm with you there.
And then obviously with Jorgen, I'm making 20 lineups. So maybe I'll have 10%. I'll have him in, I have him as a GPP play on the sheet. So I'll have him in one or two lineups, but I mean, it's a pure home run, shot or bust.
Do you have this one as just a fight to target on your sheet?
I'm gonna let me look at my GPP fights to target right now.
I was gonna say, I think I remember seeing it on there.
I do not.
No, you didn't have it on
my,
there.
My top GPP fights to target. I usually only list 6 or 7 fights, so it was Gaethje versus Ferguson, Price versus Luque, Werdum versus Olenek, Pettis versus Cerrone, Cejudo versus Cruz, and Ngannou versus Rozenstruik.
Yep. Yep. No, that makes sense. I mean, especially because, you know, like,
I mean, it's still a good fight to target.
But really, when we think about targeting fights, that's like, okay, this one's pretty much close to 50-50.
Yeah.
Whoever wins is like, and that's not really the case here. So, yeah, no, I was just curious is all. Trying to just, you know, like I said, just kind of show people how they can correlate the sheet to the podcast. I kind of want to work on that a little bit more so we can kind of, you know, give people the same information.
What do you think Jorgen's going to come in and out on ownership in DraftKings GPPs?
Shoot, bro. He's going to be super low owned, I think.
You think he'll be around 20 or even lower than that?
I think he'll be lower than that. I think if we're looking at just straight price range, you got Dominic Cruz at 7,400. You got Justin Gaethje at 7,500.
Yeah, good point. Rosa.
You know, Rosa. I just think like people would have to pass up all of that because. Yeah, so I mean,
Watterson's popular, so she'll get ownership. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, she'll get some ownership. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anything else you want to touch on real quick before we move on?
I think that's about it. I think it's a pretty straightforward fight.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we're getting to the meat and potatoes, as they like to say. We got Jeremy Stephens going up against Calvin Kattar. Should be a featherweight fight, but Jeremy Stephens is going to come in a bit heavy. he missed by 5 pounds, so not really like nothing outrageous, but he's definitely going to be the heavier fighter. It's not really going to play into this much as it usually does because of the type of matchup that we're going to see here and just the type of fighter that he is. But I mean, he is coming in heavy. He's the cheaper fighter. He's 7,300. Calvin Kattar, man, this guy's impressive. He's coming in at 8,900, and he's the minus 240 favorite. I'll let you take the reins on this one, man.
Yeah, as far as a straight-up pick, I like Kattar here a lot in this spot. I think he's world-class fighter, and I think he's going to be fighting for a title within the next 2 years. I mean, his boxing is obviously, as we know, if not the best, top three in the UFC. Really good footwork, good finishing instinct, underrated grappling. I mean, his coach said the best part of his game is his wrestling, and we haven't even seen that yet. So,
right.
And then obviously with Jeremy, I mean, there's a reason why this guy has 17 or 18 losses. I mean, he's had some fantastic KOs in the UFC, and good for him, but he's extremely limited, especially when he's going up against these guys that have big time potential. And we've seen that in this last few fights. Jeremy's really just huge winging hooks, or he throws a bunch of leg kicks, which is probably his best weapon in this fight, because we've seen Kattar struggle with the leg kicks of Moicano in the past. But as far as a fantasy standpoint, I honestly don't have much interest in this fight at all. I don't mind Kattar as a cash play, but there's other fighters I prefer, and like there's a stack. I mean, you have Esparza there, so
yeah.
I guess if you're like, I'm making 20 lineups on DraftKings, I'll throw him in one. But he just doesn't have the upside, especially for the range that he's in. That's going to separate him from the pack. It's too difficult with Tony there and Henry and Luque and Francis. It's borderline impossible. So decent cash play, little to no interest in GPP. And Jeremy Stephens, if you're doing mass entry GPP, of course you can have a share. But besides that, I don't really have much interest at all. I left him off the sheet.
Yeah, no, good. What's fucking, you want to know what's crazy? I'm looking at it right now, man. This dude, Jeremy Stephens, he's only scored over 100 points twice since.
And he's had a lot of UFC fights.
Dude, since 2015. No, I'm sorry, since 2014.
Well, like, there's this weird narrative that surrounds Jeremy that he's like Francis Ngannou. And it's so far from the truth, it drives me crazy.
It must be because he knocked out Choi, and then he Emmett. Knocked out Emmett, and then people
after
like,
getting
yeah.
dropped,
yeah, right. But yeah, that is pretty crazy. And plus, I think it's going to be pretty deflating too that he's coming off of 2 losses. Like, let's keep it real.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, like I mean, he Yair beat his ass twice. So, I mean, I think that's going to be pretty deflating.
You hear, you hear Jeremy said that he broke a year and he should have gotten the decision. He also said he doesn't believe in the coronavirus and that it's only spread through eating food. That's the type of guy we're dealing with here, folks.
This is the type of guy that we're dealing with, the delusional in all aspects of life. Like, seriously. I mean, that's pretty interesting. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you, man. We don't even need to get too much into it. That's how I feel too.
Like, if you're making five lineups, you literally don't need to roster this fight at all.
Yeah, no, not at all, because you are getting like 8,900. Calvin Kattar's in that weird spot too.
Yeah. It's no man's land.
It is. Like, you could take a shot and he may be optimal. It's like, but you're taking a shot.
Yeah, so 100%.
So it's tough. But yeah, next up we have Jairzinho Rozenstruik, and then we have Francis Ngannou. Rozenstruik is pretty interesting, man. I've been really going, not really back and forth, because I mean, it's not hard. Francis, like, is the play here, right? But just as far as how I want to play this one on DraftKings, because as far as playing DraftKings and the fights go, like, if you guys don't know, everybody started off watching UFC, and then we started playing DraftKings, and then we were like, hold up, it's not like I know all these guys, I know what's going on, and it doesn't correlate. Okay,
exactly.
It's a different game. It's just a different game. So I've been just kind of going back and forth with that one, especially as far as my multi-mass entry strategy. But pretty set, man. I mean, Francis is going to be the play. Any Rozenstruik that I have is going to be strictly for hedge, because he's so cheap and because he could clip Francis. And if he does, he is 100% going to be optimal. And when you're playing, especially multi-mass entry, like over, you know, 100 lineups or something like that, you got to think as far as those terms, like, okay, what's going to be a possible outcome? Let me get that outcome in just a couple of my lineups. In cash, I'll let you kind of deal with that. But I mean, you know, I'm sure we're not touching Jairzinho.
No. Yeah.
And at 9,100, really, we get a nice little discount on Francis, because he's not going to be the most expensive fighter on the card. And that's always nice too. So, I mean, yeah, man, this one's not really too difficult to call or to tell. Francis is going to be the play. Anything you want to drop in on this one?
Just let me start off by saying I did leave Rozenstruik off the cheat sheet, but if you want to play him as a GPP punt, I will not talk you out of that. That's obviously fine. Yeah. As we've seen, he has plenty of power. It's just,
is he going to get to him? Is he going to?
I haven't seen many people talking about the reach advantage that Francis has. Like, he has 6 inches of reach. And when you have to try to get into the pocket against a guy like Francis, you're going to have to eat strikes. And no, I mean, you're not going to be able to, I don't care how good your chin is, you're not going to be able to do that. After a few minutes, you're eventually just going to go to sleep. And with Rozenstruik, I am not impressed at all with his striking defense. In fact, I think it's pretty piss awful for a professional kickboxer. He keeps his hand down. His chin's always sticking out. He has poor head movement. He was getting cracked with the slowest punches I've ever seen in my fight, in the Ream fight. And I just think when he tries to get in range to land one of his big punches, I just think he's going to get put out cold by Francis. And the only, obviously, Francis always makes a great fantasy play, but it's just his scores always capped around 100 to 105 because he's just not going to land a lot of strikes, because the guys are going to go to sleep before he has the chance to. So I think, if we were looking at a guy like Vicente Luque, who we know can score well over 120, I think it's a contrarian play to have a higher ownership to Luque compared to Francis.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, man. It's funny. The reason why I chuckled real quick is, as we were talking about it, I just quickly looked up just his stats from his last fights. Dude, 9 significant strikes, 1 knockdown, 6 significant strikes, 13, a little bit down. You got 6, 8, just insane. 1. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to be able to take too many of those. And that goes back to kind of what we were talking about earlier as well. So yeah, man, no, I agree.
Yeah. Like, he's a very good play. Like, I have him marked down as a cash and a GPP play. It's just, there's a very good, there's a very good chance that somebody like Ware Doom or somebody like Luque could outscore him. That's right in that same exact price range.
Especially Luque.
Yeah.
Yep. For sure, man. Good shit. All right, guys, we are we're almost done here. We got the two final fights here. We got the bantamweight title going on here against Dominic Cruz, going up against Henry Cejudo, Triple C, man, hell yeah. These are going to be some 135ers. I usually say these are some little guys, but, like, you know, Dominic's kind of tall for the weight class, and Henry's, like, I don't know what the hell's going on with Henry, bro. He's beefing up, and it's crazy. But yeah, this is going to be a good fight, man. Henry's 8,800. You got the OG coming back at 7,400. Before I give my little breakdown on this, because, I'll tell you real quick, like, Henry's my pick, but this is one of those fights, man. You guys, I just want you to enjoy it. You know, I really want you to enjoy it. We haven't seen Dominic Cruz since 2016. So for him to come back and fight during this time, a lot of these fights, I'm telling you guys, man, it's more so for the fans. Now, Henry called him out and Dominic wants this fight. So it's not so much of that, but trust me, Dominic's getting up for this one because of what's going on, because he definitely could have pulled a stunt here. He's been pulling them a lot lately. So, I mean, this is going to be just one of those ones you sit back, enjoy, hopefully, you know.
This is as high level as it gets in MMA.
I mean, seriously. Yeah. And Dominic has got, you know, going into the breakdown, man, when Dominic comes back from these long – these long kind of vacations, if you want to call them that, these long layoffs, I mean, he's crushing, you know. Now it's been 4 years and he's fighting a completely different competition here, as I know he wants to say something real quick, but yeah, I mean, you know, it is what it is. He's real cheap, but Henry Cejudo, man, this guy's on another planet right now. I think he strictly called out Dominic Cruz because he wants the name, man. He wants the name on his resume. He wants to say, I beat him. He wants to be the legend slayer. So he can say that he was the greatest combat, you know, fighter in history, combat sports fighter in history. And, the path that he's on right now, it's hard to say that he's not, you know, say what you want for his antics and all that kind of stuff too. Not really going to speak on that, but I know a fighter when I see one, man. And this guy's came from the bottom. He's been through a lot mentally. And I think if he does have a stick, it's kind of just to keep him in the limelight for right now, because let's be honest, that's what's selling. Sure. Like, that's what people want to see, dude.
For sure.
But as far as, like, this is a world
people love athlete. Jorge, but they hate Henry. It literally makes no sense. It right. makes zero sense.
Right. And like, just recently too, like, do you guys know Jorge? Like,
yeah. Don't. I'll go on like a 5-hour rant. Don't get me started.
Oh man, I know, it's crazy. But dude, Henry's world class. He's in shape. He's getting stronger.
Yeah.
You know, he's in his prime, and I think this is really like just a. Like, I think Dominic Cruz is just, like, walking to his funeral, man, to tell you the truth. Now, I love me some Dominic Cruz, man. And I think on top of just what we've discussed, as far as just a fight breakdown, like, the matchup is not good for him. We were talking about it. Dominic Cruz, he likes to have those angles. That's what it means, coming from the WEC, the footwork, all that kind of stuff. You know, like, that's been his thing forever. Innovative with the footwork, you know. But right now, Henry Cejudo, that is what he's doing. If you watched him against even TJ, man, like, he caught TJ in the back of the head with that shit. You know what I'm saying?
He's the best in MMA at cutting off his opponent's angles.
He's going to be quicker than Dominic Cruz. Yep. I mean, it's not going to be good. And I think at 8,800, we do get a nice little discount on it. It's going to be interesting to see what the ownership will look like, but I'll keep it real. I'll have a lot of Henry. I'll have a little bit of Dominic Cruz just in case. And that's how I'm moving on that one. What do you think, man?
Yeah. And obviously, if you guys follow me on Twitter, it's no secret that I'm a massive Henry Cejudo fan. I mean, like I told you earlier, it might not be Sunday morning. It might not be a year from now, but someday, 5 to 10 years, like, you know, 5 to 10 years from now, the MMA community is going to wake up and realize just how goddamn good this guy is. Like, Henry is.
It's crazy.
If he beats Cruz, I think it's arguable that could be the best winning streak ever. So, I mean, I just think, obviously, Dom's had a unbelievable career. He's a 135-pound goat as of now. It won't be for much longer, but it's just, this is a whole different animal. Henry Cejudo is not Takeo Mizugaki. Like, let's stop pretending of what's going on here. And so, I mean, Dom's, what, 4 years older since his last fight, which he just got completely outclassed.
Yeah.
And that opponent, which was Cody Garbrandt, did what he needed to, and he cut off Dom's angles. And that's where he kept on clipping Dom. And like we talked about a few minutes ago, Henry is probably the best in the sport at that right now. And I mean, Henry just throws more output. He hits harder. Obviously, he's an Olympic gold medalist wrestler. And on DraftKings, I have him in the GPP core. I like him a lot. He's one of my favorite overall plays. I think he's going to get a finish at some point. And with Cruz, a lot of people are going to look at his game log in DraftKings, and they'll see 100 points, 134 points, 116, 106, 120, and then 44 in his last loss. But you really need to dig in the numbers and see, like, where do those points come from? So let's see, takedowns. He has 0 takedowns in his last fight, which is the only fight that he didn't get a takedown and he lost. Sorry about the siren.
That's all good. They're coming to get you.
And then, so like Faber, he had 3 takedowns with 1 reversal and 2 advancements. Dillashaw, 4 takedowns. Mizugaki, 2 takedowns and advancement. Johnson, 10 takedowns, 8 advancements. Faber, 4 takedowns, 1 advancement in the first fight. And so like those points aren't going to be there against Henry Cejudo. They're just not. And so then you have to look at how many significant strikes is Cruz landing and what points are coming from that. And he's landed
all of them, basically.
Cruz has landed 110, over 100 significant strikes once in his UFC career. So the best case scenario is you're looking at 50 points and a loss, which is fine as a cash punt. I have him on the cheat sheet as a cash punt. I just think as far as a GPP play, I feel like he's being overvalued because the lack of there's not going to be any grappling upside in this matchup, which is really, really, really going to affect his score.
Yeah, no, he's not taking Henry down. Like,
no.
If he does, it's going to be some crazy shit. I don't know.
Henry's getting right back up if it does.
Yeah, man. Like, that's the thing, too. Like, Henry, dude is a world-class wrestler, man.
Olympic gold medalist. Yep.
Like, dude, I mean, while he looks like he's improving on the feet, because he has, I mean, he's gotten a lot quicker.
Oh,
like, dude,
yeah.
It's just impressive everywhere. You're
this clinch is unbelievable.
Yeah. Oh, man. When he had Marlon in the tie,
man.
I'm like, oh, man. Marlon, he wasn't ready for it. And even though it's just a tie clinch, I mean, I say that I'm, sitting here talking to you guys, but like, these guys have probably trained for a tie clinch before, guessing.
Yeah.
It just caught him so off guard. And when you're in a fight, I do know this much, things are so quick. It's like, oh shit. Yep. Okay. Oh shit. So it's interesting, man. But yeah, for sure. I agree with you, man. All right, guys. So we made it. This is the main event. I can't do the Bruce Buffer, but you'll hear it tomorrow. We got Justin Gaethje, who essentially is stepping in for Khabib here. I mean, that's what's happening. You got Justin Gaethje going up against Tony Ferguson, El Kakui himself. He's 8,700 on DraftKings. You got Justin Gaethje at 7,500 on DraftKings. I mean, yeah, man, I think we are both in cahoots, if you could say that. We like Justin here quite a bit. Mm-hmm. We think as far as DraftKings is concerned, this is another instance where DraftKings and just the fights, they're different aspects, they're different animals. As far as DraftKings is concerned, Justin is a great play, man. He's 7,500. I know in cash you really like him.
Oh, yeah.
In tournaments, we'll probably see some ownership on him. But this is a fight you can kind of go all in on anyway. Pick your poison. Go all in on it. I honestly wouldn't even be mad at you if you wanted to just 50-50 this bad boy. A lot of the times I don't really like doing that, and I don't really advise it because you're like, well, shit, half your lineups aren't going to cash and half of them will. But I think with the plays that we have on this card specifically, I think things are going to get unique. It might not take a lot of ownership on some of these other plays for you to have those unique lineups and for you at least be able to make enough headway to make some good money with those 1 or 2, 3, 4 lineups, whatever they may be. So that's interesting. But personally, I'll be probably more of the 60-40, that kind of thing. I just think Justin, especially on DraftKings, man, he opens up so much for us as far as salary is concerned. His upside is massive. It's just the straight up fight, I'm going to give it to Tony. I think Tony, if he just kind of sticks to what he's, stick to his guns and doesn't rush in there, doesn't fight Justin's game, doesn't try to take his head off right away, which I think he knows he can't do, but he also can't wrestle this guy either. So this is going to be interesting. I'm going to pick Tony here, but for DraftKings purposes, Gaethje's going to be my play, and I'll hopefully be a little bit over the field on him. What do you think, sir?
Yeah, I think, if I'm being completely honest, I think it's going to be a brutal knockout, and I think this is going to be the beginning of the end for Tony Ferguson, and Justin Gaethje will become the interim champ. Since this fight was announced, I felt like Gaethje is a horrible matchup. Obviously, Tony's always been very hittable, and he's been dropped in multiple fights. Always. And especially in his fights, recent fights, since his comeback against Pettis and Donald, he's been very hittable and he's been rocked multiple times.
Pettis had his spots in that fight, man. Oh, yeah. Especially early. I mean, that's how he is.
He was one or two strikes away from finishing the fight.
Yes, he was.
So
yeah.
you can't do that versus Justin. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Khabib. You can't get away with that versus a guy like Justin. And so while I do think Tony is the much better overall fight, I mean, Tony's one of the best fighters ever, but we have to look into the style breakdowns and just, I think it's a horrific matchup for Tony. Obviously, would I be shocked if he won? Not at all, but I think it would have to be late in the fight. And by that point, I think Justin Gaethje could already rack up 60 to 80 points, even if he loses, which is still over 9x on DraftKings, which has a very good chance to be an optimal lineup. So he is in the GPP core in DraftKings. And then I do have this fight stacked in the cash core, which means you're going to roster both fighters. And then you're ideally hoping that they combine to score over 120 points. And as far as, I'll probably have around 60% Gaethje, and I'll have around 30% Tony in GPP. Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about it as you were kind of talking too. I'm like, yeah, you know, I really only can. It's tough to say this, man, because you never know, right? We're trying to just kind of call it the best we can, especially with DraftKings involved. But I think Tony, really, as far as having a high score outcome, what is he going to do? Just put mad pressure on Justin, and what is he going to hope Justin gets tired and stops swinging? Like, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's just tough when you think about all the outcomes here. Could something crazy happen? He catch him, because one thing that we haven't seen too much of is Justin Gaethje's actually MMA wrestling, because there is a difference. There's a difference, and we haven't really seen too much of that because, like, the way he fights, you know. And I still don't really think it'll come to that, but shit, maybe something happens. Tony catches him in something crazy, and who knows, because we haven't seen it. But then,
one thing we didn't talk about, I'll mention real quickly, is the leg kicks from Justin are probably the most devastating, in MMA with Barboza. And with Tony, obviously, we know he has reconstructed knees and he's getting older. Like, I honestly don't know how many leg kicks he's going to be able to eat from Justin before he's just about done. Like, Justin lands over 3 leg kicks per minute. So let's say Justin lands on the low, let's say we'll give him a low side of 6 to 7 in the first round. I mean, there's a good chance that Tony is on one leg come the start of the second round. So by that point, he would just be a sitting duck.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, do yourself a favor. Watch a Justin Gaethje highlight or fight real quick. Look at the leg kick. I mean, yeah, there you go. That's Greeley's finest. Like, it's pretty crazy, man.
I mean, just looking at his losses on DraftKings, like, even when he's getting knocked out, he's still scoring 40 and 50 points. Like,
yeah. Yeah. No, he's live. And based off of what I can see, he'll probably carry some ownership. But like I said, I think that ownership is just going to be based on people telling people to play the main event. And we didn't touch on it too much on this one. This is really easy thing. He talks about it, like, we're not trying to just cash in these tournaments. You know, that's what cash is for. Like, so we can double up and shit like that. Like, exactly. We're playing these tournaments. We're trying to take these things down. One thing to do that is to be over the weight, overweight or underweight, right? So you want to be under the weight on the field when guys possibly lose or aren't putting up big scores, these expensive guys. But you want to be overweight on a play like maybe Justin Gaethje, or even say Tony. Shit, say you think Tony's going to be the guy and you think he's going to be 40, 50% owned, and you're playing a bunch of those lineups, you know, a way to differentiate yourself is, you know, put them at 55, 60, whatever your tolerance would be, you know, that you can kind of, that you can tolerate, because again, you know, it's your money. So at the end of the day, I mean, it's a fist fight too. So keep that in mind, but just to give you a little bit of the mindset on how, you know, how you can differentiate, especially when it's like, well, these guys are 50% owned anyway. So what difference does it make? Well, so, you know, make sure you have more than others, you know, just exactly. Simply. But yeah, man, fuck. Thanks for doing this again with me. Little disclaimer, we did have it all set to go earlier, and we had to fire our producer. So Sway got fired.
That guy's out of control.
But no, man, thanks for being a good sport and checking in with me again and doing it. And I think, you know, we should make people some money this week, you know, and things can get crazy. And even if they do, I think we've talked enough about how to hedge yourself and how to, you know, try to pick your spots. And at the end of the day, you know, we got to get lucky, but shit, man, good shit. You ain't got anything else?
Just had a blast breaking down the fights with you, and I hope everybody enjoys the fight card and getting some live sports back in our lives. Yeah. And just good luck with your DraftKings lineups, and if you make any bets this week.
Yep, for sure. And stay safe, everybody, and just continue to take care of yourself and your families. And yeah.